We're going to get started. If you could take your seats, we don't yet have a quorum, but the Judiciary Finance and Policy Committee, today is January 30th, 2013. Members, today we are going to have a report on technology and the judicial branch, and then we're also going to hear from the public defenders about their technology needs. We'll officially call the meeting to order when we have a quorum, and then we'll ask for approval of the minutes at that time. So our presenters are Judge Cahill and Mark Moore. So please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Pete Cahill, and I'm the Chief Judge of the 4th Judicial District, which is Hennepin County.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Moore, and I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Judicial Branch.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, thanks for this opportunity to come before you again. And focus more on technology. Obviously, if there are any leftover questions from when we did the court overview, happy to chime in on that as well. But our focus today on technology, I think, will show you how we're trying to capitalize on a lot of efficiencies that current technology provides that are being used by private businesses that are translatable into the public sector. To put this in context, Judicial Council has our policy 701, which does require that all the technology expenditures are considered and planned in the context of the entire state judicial branch. In other words, we are now a statewide branch, but we also have to think about that from a technological point of view. How we're doing business should not be a Hennepin County versus Ramsey County versus Pennington County issue. It should be statewide approaches, standardization of approach. We did that when we have a statewide information system. But what we're finding now as we roll out new business procedures with e-filing is that our processes may not have all been standardized. So that's one thing we've been finding out. The other part of the policy is to ensure that our investments and resource allocations are driven by business needs and strategies. So this is not a case of, well, I saw somebody had this type of tool. Can I get an iPad too, for example? It's not driven by a me too, but what's the business need for anything? In our district, for example, we have been using iPads for judges because we realized that we were spending about $1,300 for books every year for each judge, but by buying an iPad and putting all those resources in electronic format without violating any copyright because it's all the statutes and rules, that we were able to reduce the cost that we were spending to access legal materials and at the same time use a technological solution, so we'll actually save money. But it has to be based on business need, not just because it's the latest toy that's coming out.
Excuse me. Members, we do officially have a quorum, so I will officially call the meeting to order. Go ahead, Your Honor.
All right. Also, we want to support the Minnesota Judicial Branch Enterprise Architecture. It is a statewide enterprise architecture, not county-to-county based. And also ensure that our investments follow a comprehensive and well-defined course throughout any biennium. We are constantly looking at the long term and planning strategically. So the jewel of the crown, so to speak, at least at this point in time, is eCourt Minnesota. And the vision of eCourt Minnesota is that the courts will operate in an entirely paperless environment to provide timely, accurate, convenient, and appropriate access to information. And all of those are important. Those are the various issues we're dealing with. Because if it's not timely, it's not convenient, it's not going to be used. If it's not appropriate, then we're giving people data that they should not be having. So data should be classified appropriately in an electronic environment. Yeah, we need it to do business. But why are we going to the paperless? Aside from the fact that we want to have the timely access to information, why else are we doing this? Well, most importantly, because the public expects it. If you can order a book on Amazon with a few clicks on the website, does it make sense that the courts can't access information the same way? So the public expects all kinds of e-commerce methods, so we are trying to follow that as well. But the technology for us also allows us to do business more efficiently and more innovatively. For example, our case management system is web-based. Mark's here to throw sharp elbows at me when I start talking tech and say something wrong. So if you see him assault me, he has permission to do so. But it is web-based so that through the internet we can access the information statewide. It does not have to be on a computer-by-computer basis. that allows us to have the statewide case management system, which you've probably heard about, MNCIS, or Odyssey. Odyssey is the brand name from Tyler Technologies, but we've relabeled it as the Minnesota Case Information System, or MNCIS. Because of that, and because it is web-based, it enables me as a judge sitting in misdemeanor arraignments in Hennepin County to see the guy who's in the box in custody, not knowing why he's got a hold on him from Dakota County, that I can look up and see, well, you have a hold from Dakota because you've got an outstanding warrant and the bail's $300, and if you post it here, they'll get your court date and not have to transport you, which just saved, if nothing else, saved the sheriff a trip over to Ramsey County, just by providing a little bit of information. And finally, we want court processing to be quicker and more efficient. Our goals, more specifically, aside from that vision, is we want to increase productivity and reduce operational costs. This will primarily come in the area of routine data entry. Part of the e-court initiative is e-filing, where the lawyers will actually file documents through a website. And by doing that, they do some data entry for us. So whenever I speak to lawyers, I say very honestly, we have outsourced some of our data entry to you. And I'm very honest about it, and I thank them for it, but it is true. We are outsourcing some of our data entry to the lawyers. We hope in return it's not just reducing operational costs for us, but it's also reducing operational costs for them. And a good example of that is e-service.
Your Honor, how do you make certain then that the outsourcing of data entry actually gets data entered correctly so that we don't end up with, like at the BCA, a suspense file where things don't really match up?
Right, kind of garbage in, garbage out.
I'm sorry?
Kind of garbage in, garbage out type problem.
Correct, Your Honor.
Madam Chair, we do that primarily by putting a clerk in to review everything that is e-filed. Unlike the federal government, where the U.S. District Court accepts everything automatically, we actually have a clerk review each of the filings that's made. And since a lot of it is not free text data entry, it's mostly picking things from drop-down boxes, it's fairly quick to review. The clerk is not reading through each and every page of a document that's filed, but they do look to make sure the right caption, the case is correct, the number is correct, the filing fee is correct, and they've used the right code on what it is. For example, if it's supposed to be a summons and complaint, but they put down answers to interrogatories, the clerk can change that quickly. So there's not a whole lot of data entry. That's number one, make the burden light on the lawyers. And number two, have a clerk review it to make sure that everything that's entered is accurate. Because obviously, even though we're outsourcing the data entry, we don't want it to be polluting our system, so to speak, with a lot of bad data. So we do perform that review function. But even that review function, as I said, is fairly quick and fairly easy to do. For lawyers also, the use of an electronic environment allows them to use e-service. Instead of having to take every piece of paper that used to be filed and then make copies, put them in envelopes, address the envelope, send them off to everybody in the mail, or have a courier come in, take all the documents, and serve them physically. The e-service part is where the lawyers, I think, benefit in return by clicking serve, and it serves all the parties. And when you have a large party or a large civil case with maybe 12 lawyers, 12 different parties, it can serve all those parties with just one click, and it goes off to everybody. And the rules provide that if you use that system, the lawyers also don't have to file a separate affidavit of service, the affidavit saying, I've in fact served all the parties by United States mail. Because everything is logged, they don't have to take that extra step. So it does save them some time when they serve a document, not having to provide the documentation that they've done it, because we do it for them.
Judge Cahill, what about when you have pro se defendants or folks without lawyers?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be talking about that in a little bit, but that's something that is fairly new around the country. E-filing, we are not on the bleeding edge of that. There are other states that have implemented e-filing, North Dakota, New Mexico, Arizona, parts of Texas, and so we're not alone in this. But we are going to be unique, I think, in coming up with a solution for people who are self-represented. The idea being that if we can design a similar website, but break it down into more like a TurboTax type, if I could use that example, way of doing business. Personally, I'll admit this on camera, I don't do my own taxes and I don't know how to do my own taxes. But TurboTax does. I answer the questions, it puts together a number, it tells me how much I owe, it goes off to the IRS. I don't even know what my taxes look like. but it allows me to do it without hiring an accountant. The same thing here. If somebody can't afford a lawyer, we're hoping we can come up with a portal where if they answer certain questions, it will produce the document for the person and then e-file it for them. So they'll be able to use the same technology that lawyers are going to use to e-file. So they can use it now, but I think we're expecting a lot to have people go through and master the system without the legal training.
Judge Cahill, so then you probably are going to answer this question later. So then will you have the technology at the courthouse for them to use to do that if they don't own a computer or have internet access at home, or will you have that available? And if you have that later on in your presentation, I'll stop
it. That's a good time to talk about
Judge
it now.
Judge Cahill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the answer to that is because everything is web-based, including the e-filing system, it can be filed from any computer, so they can go to the public library with a jump drive with their documents on it and file that way. We'll almost for sure have some kind of access at the various courthouses because people are still going to want to access the file. If we don't have a paper file anymore, we have to have some way if someone wants to come to our counters just like they do now and look at a paper file, we've got to have some way for them to access the electronic file. So we anticipate that we would have some type of capability to access documents, which are, since it's all web-based, they could probably use that same kiosk to also file. We're trying to discourage people from having to come to the courthouse, not because we don't want them there, but because it's much easier for them to usually find a spot more near their home, either their own home computer or a public library where they don't have to stand in line or go through weapon screening or all the or park downtown, at least for the Minneapolis folks. So getting back to our goals, we do want to provide easy-to-use electronic court services. We want the web-based things we're talking about to be easy to use and not just a complex thing that requires a degree in computer science. I think we've done well so far. The best comment I've heard from some lawyers is, your system is better than the feds. And that's music to my ears. But we're always looking at ways of automating and making things easier and better to use. Most importantly, we want to build a secure and reliable infrastructure and technical infrastructure, because no matter what kind of idea we come up with, if we don't have the internet backbone to every county in the state, every courthouse in the state, it doesn't do us much good to have this web-based system if all our court clerks are looking at some spinning hourglass or stopwatch because the system is too slow that we don't have the infrastructure. Or if, God forbid, something happens to the Minnesota Judicial Center, where some of the documents are actually kept on the servers, if there's a flood or fire, if there's no backup, then obviously we're out of business, just like any in the paper days, that once there's a flood or fire, you're out of business. But with the Disaster Recovery Center, which I think is much more, we're calling it high availability.
High availability.
Disaster recovery is just too negative. Realistically, if the system goes down in St. Paul, we want a backup so we can get online within hours. So if the worst happens, and there's some kind of destruction of the main servers here at St. Paul, that St. Cloud can kick in and everybody can continue to do business within a matter of hours or we're not going to be at minutes, but not weeks or months, and that's the important thing.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to goals, could you give me some idea what percentage and time frame you're looking at as far as court processing in this e-fashion? I mean, by 2016, do you expect to have a certain percentage? What's your framework and goals in that regard?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, we have a time frame that is fairly rough of about 4 years, and actually when I talk about the phases that we're going through, you can kind of see where we're at on the rollout. We're currently finishing up phase one of that, which are the pilot counties, with 11 counties up and running. And we hope that once we can learn from the pilot what our needs are going to be, what differences we need to make in the computer system, that we can make those and then start rolling out more rapidly to other counties. So, and I'll get into that a little bit. Does that answer your question, or are you talking about each document specifically?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm talking more in totality. Do you expect like 50% of court processing to be done in this fashion, more or less? What's your goal in there, Gary?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, our goal is that everything is electronic. We recognize that we are not going to be able to get there strictly through the e-filing system that we're using, that we are going to have to take pictures of pieces of paper for a while, essentially imaging. Right now, when you come in and you file a civil case in Hennepin County as a self-represented person, you're not required to use the e-filing system. Lawyers are. They are mandated in Hennepin Ramsey. They must use it for civil and family cases. But if you're representing yourself, you're not required. But we want our staff to be operating in only one environment, not, okay, is this a paper file or is this an electronic file? So to do that, when those cases come in that are allowed to be paper, we actually, the first step is to scan them and enter them into the system. So as we roll out, we want to be entirely electronic.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. So I had the great opportunity of sitting on the bench with Judge Tenney on Friday, and I spent the entire day in Wright County in the 10th District. So when we were there on the bench and he was going back and forth between the law clerk, he was mentioning that it was fantastic that they could do so much electronically, but it also slowed some things down. I'm not sure if Wright County is one of your pilot programs, but is that something that you're seeing in the pilots, that it, while it is it's fantastic to have everything loaded up immediately, it does take time in the court, you know, in the at the time that they're doing it. Are you seeing that slowing things down, or is it doesn't seem to matter?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, we have seen a slow up at the beginning, and I think it's more a learning curve more than anything else. Part of this goes back to when we rolled out MNCES. This is just my opinion. About 5 years ago when we rolled MNCES out, we kind of sold, or it was kind of thought of as, well, this is the clerk's tools. We don't have to bother judges with it. So the judges didn't really learn how to use our information system. They relied on the clerks. I think in retrospect, that was probably a bad idea, because judges are just now learning how to use that system, because that's also where the documents are now. So a lot of this is judges engaged in a learning curve of, I have a calendar, but I don't have the old paper file, so where do I find it, and what do I click to get to that case and to look at the document? I think once you get the training and you get some experience in it, it is a lot more, it is much easier to use, especially with some of the tools I'm going to talk about later, where you can come up with a full-size screen of what the document looks like.
Follow up?
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chairwoman. The other thing that I have a question about is the public defenders, and I actually had Representative Lesh and I had dinner with a couple of the public defenders from the 10th District, and their concern was technology and how they were going to afford the technology so that they could be integrated in. Is there a plan for that?
Representative O'Neill, the public defenders are going to present next, so we're going to ask them as soon as the court is finished, and so that might be a really good question to ask them.
Thank you, Chair.
Madam Chair, I don't mind Mr. Sikora coming after me. He promised he'd be nice.
Okay.
Yes, I think that's a legitimate concern, if I could address that very briefly.
Certainly, Judge Cahill.
If we're going to have an entire electronic file, there has to be the capability to access that, and I know the public defenders are looking at their hardware needs for that. To meet them in the middle, so to speak, we are engaged in a project where, as a branch, we're upgrading the Wi-Fi capability throughout all of our courthouses in the state, so that the last thing you need is a bunch of electronic documents and no access to the internet to be able to get them. And so that's one thing we're doing to build up our infrastructure to get the documents as far as we can. Well, and as I think I've already talked about, this is all about being fiscally cost neutral, trying to be sensible. At this point, the branch is not asking for increase in fees to fund this. We're trying to fund this entirely out of labor savings and other internal shifts in money, and not ask for more money for this project specifically. To give you an idea of some of the re-engineering we're doing, getting back to the idea of being a statewide branch and how we can have some efficiencies.
If I could just go back to that one
question.
So you said that you're not asking for any additional money to fund this particular project, but that only includes what you're upgrading inside the courtroom and the technology for the courts. It doesn't count any plan for technology for your partners that would need access in the courtroom, so it won't take care of the public defender's needs. It won't take care of pro se litigants' needs. Is that correct, Judge Cahill?
Madam Chair, that is correct. And this does not go into the, when I say we're going to self-fund, we're talking about the core of the business processes that we are changing to an electronic format. It doesn't necessarily include even all the hardware, maybe changes in benches at the county level. maybe some laptops for judges that normally did not have them before. And we don't know what that number is yet, but there might be some cost there for some basic hardware at the final user end, is what I'm saying. And definitely not for partners, right? I haven't talked about that.
Thank you.
Statewide, we're trying to come up with a statewide branch, including an e-filing support center. We started in Hennepin and Ramsey with e-filing, and so if you had a problem with it, you'd have to call Hennepin or Ramsey. And as we rolled out more counties, we now have 11 counties using e-filing. We really don't want people to have to worry about, okay, what's the number for this county if I call, if I have a problem. So we now have a centralized statewide support center where staff are answering the phone on how to e-file during business hours. Also, the same thing with document processing. Currently, each county is still handling their own filings, but we need to look statewide, as we did with the centralized payment center. Is there some efficiencies we could create by, after all, the documents are electronic, doesn't matter where the clerk is sitting. Perhaps we can centralize some of that function and have experts processing it, whether they sit at a counter, behind the counter at in Kandy, Ojai County, but maybe are processing Hennepin filings. That's certainly a possibility that we should look at, not only because it'd probably be more efficient, but also to keep maybe some courthouses that are looking for extra work to keep their counters open. That might also be able to dovetail those two initiatives. District level consolidation. One of the biggest pains for clerks have always been putting together a file to transmit to the Court of Appeals. It doesn't sound like it'd be much, but it's like chasing down and making sure you got all the paper in the right place, making sure the record is absolutely complete before it goes to the Court of Appeals. Because we're going to an electronic file, that's going to be a lot easier. And so we are able to designate experts in each district who will be responsible for that, who will, when there is an appeal, package up, so to speak, the electronic file and send it to the Court of Appeals. I can't tell you the number of hours that this has already saved in Hennepin County by designating that one person to package up the file electronically. At a county court level, we're looking for imaging specialists. It doesn't make sense that you just put a scanner on everybody's desk and say when a file comes in, scan it, and then do your normal routine. It makes more sense to come up with a more centralized, get it to an imaging person who knows how to operate the machine and put all the barcodes on to get it in the right place and all the other things they have to do to make sure our case management system is updated appropriately. And so we're looking at the specialization at a county level as well. And I keep hitting the screen with my finger thinking it's a touch screen. That's a habit. These are the primary four tools we've talked about. I've touched on e-file and serve, electronic court tools, which I'll show you in a second, e-citations and e-complaints. And I want to stop there for a second and talk about e-complaints. I think that the e-complaint system that we have now in criminal is a good example of where we should be going as a branch and as a criminal justice system, because it's going beyond just e-filing documents. It's actually building automatic steps into a workflow so that when a cop puts together information, a police report, prosecutor can take it, put it into a complaint, and have that complaint sent along to the court without duplicating entry. In other words, okay, now I got to read the police report. Now I have to retype exactly what that police officer put in his report into the charging system. And I'll get to that in a little bit. Those abilities to integrate our different systems gives us a chance to avoid duplicate data entry of the same things. That same story told in the police report, same story told in the complaint. We shouldn't have people typing that twice.
Representative Lesh.
Thanks. Madam Chair, Judge, I experience extreme frustration on this level because it's not just duplicate, but it's four or five times the different people are entering in the same information. I get a police report that I can view online. However, when I have to actually charge up a file and do a manifold, I have to enter into a separate manifold, which will go in the file, and then it's a gross misdemeanor. I'm typing that same information into a complaint. So we're talking, I don't know how many times it is. That said, do you foresee any issues? Because as it stands now, as much as I hate the system, there are multiple double checks on error. There are multiple error checks because there are multiple people that are entering in. Do you foresee any future issues with that? Because there will be one person who's the gatekeeper, and if they screw up, then the file is incorrect or causes problems down the line.
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair and Representative Lesh, I think because we have a number of fail-safes built in, not only does the judge have to approve it with their fingerprint or password, but a clerk has to look at it one more time. I'm hoping that we, if we have enough eyes looking at it, somebody will catch any errors that occur. Similar to the paper system, if there is something, we can always try and back it out, take, you know, dismiss the charges, vacate, whatever we need to do. I'm less worried about it in an electronic system, to be honest, than I am in a paper system. Because we've got people looking at, multiple people looking at it with an eye towards, is everything right on here? And if we can build in certain rules to automate it, I think that would even further reduce the chance for error. Let me give you an example. Under an e-filing system, if a probation officer types up a pre-sentence investigation, and it's got a lot of information about chemical health, the mental health, the private data that you really don't want out in the public. Now, we can work on that document being e-filed, which gives us some efficiency. But when the person e-files it, they have to mark it as public or confidential, and most probation officers are pretty savvy and trained well to say that's a confidential document. Well, our clerk will look at it and say, if it was marked public, nope, that's confidential, so we have another catch. But why don't we just build in an integration where once they produce the document itself and when they've selected that what I'm doing is preparing a pre-sentence investigation, when I send this to the court, have coding in the background that says when it gets filed, when I hit sign and send, that it goes off and it's already marked as confidential, so you don't have anybody even making the selection. So that's a good example, I think, on the integration where we should look towards that to automate some of the things that we don't want human error getting in the way on how we classify documents, for example.
Judge Cahill, you're going to have a lot of information about victims and bank accounts and things of that, right, especially in the criminal statute. And we've seen in other databases that sometimes that information gets to people that it doesn't belong getting to. What is your plan for developing those fail-safes to make sure that those things don't end up in the hands of the wrong people? Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, that's the thing that keeps me up at night and gives me heartburn, is the idea of that stuff getting out into an electronic environment. A couple of fail-safes that we have that we hope to build in is, first of all, again, more eyes on it, the better. Lawyers will still have the responsibility, and I emphasize this every time I speak on e-courts to lawyers. You still have, as lawyers, the responsibility to make sure that stuff is not in there. It shouldn't be in there. The rules say so, and it's your job to do so. Same is true in federal court. But we know mistakes happen. So if the clerk sees it, they will they have read action software, or they can mark it as a confidential document, keep it out of the public view. They can use either of those tools. But we're also looking at, as a branch, buying some redaction software that automatically scans the document and through the variety of algorithms they build in, look for account numbers, dates of birth, telephone numbers, identifying information, and redact it automatically. So washing it through. And did I get that right?
Yes.
Okay. So the more we can build in some automatic, the better. But I think having pairs of human eyes on it, which is more than we do now. Somebody files a complaint, police officer signs it, takes it down to the clerk, clerk file stamps it, puts it in the folder. Public data, we didn't check for bank account numbers or other identifying information. I think in the electronic environment, we are more aware of that, looking at it more, but I really would like to see that software put in place so that even if we all screw up in that process, the clerk, the filer, is to have the system automatically looking for those things and flagging and redacting. Because if I have an electronic document that gets out and some identity thief then uses it to steal somebody's identity, that's my worst name. So, anyway, this is just a little graphic for criminal e-filing. It's a little more complicated because it has the two systems. It has the e-charging through the BCA, but then our e-file and serve system for all other documents comes through e-file and serve portal that they use in civil, family, probate, etc. And the last thing is what I was talking about, that idea of a pre-sentence investigation. If we can do an integration, which I think is the ultimate way to be electronic, so that the person preparing their pre-sentence investigation hits sign and send, and all the code in the background updates our system automatically, uses the right code, gives it the right public or confidential status, and the person has done their job once, not three different times entering the same data. Kind of on the same thing with complaints. We hope that as an example of an integration, a prosecutor who types up the complaint and says sign and send, we hope that's all they have to do. But we also hope that when it hits our system automatically classifies it as public if it's a summons and complaint, confidential if it's a warrant, so that it's not in the public realm until the warrant is executed. So it's a little more complex, and I think the integrations are a real hope for the future, because we're dealing with a discrete number of criminal justice partners. For example, the Department of Corrections and our various community corrections organizations. So hopefully we can do that.
Judge Cahill, do you anticipate that it will change the practice of, for example, quite often you have probation revocations that are contested that are based on a new conviction. Do you anticipate that partners would be able to use the documents that are in MNCIS rather than going to the courthouse to get certified copies of the new conviction? Or, you know, if the criminal offense, for example, requires a conviction of a prior offense, just being able to use the MNCIS documents as admissible court documents for proof, or do you anticipate that they would still then need to go to the courthouse, get a paper copy of the certified conviction for submission to court? Judge Cahill?
Madam Chair, I actually, if I can digress a second, the frustration that I experienced myself is when my son was preparing to take the bar exam, and he had to get some court paperwork, I think, from a traffic ticket in Milwaukee, and he would have had to travel down to Milwaukee to print out a copy of that document, which I thought was insane. Why couldn't he just go across the river to Hudson? That frustration informs me on what we should do here, which is we are a statewide branch. We have a statewide case information system. The documents are available statewide. If I'm a judge in Hennepin or a prosecutor in Hennepin and I want an Anoka County conviction, at the very least I'll be able to see it because it's the document is available through MNCIS. The question of what legal standard does it have to be printed out and certified? I don't know the answer, and I'll let the Rules Committee decide that, but it makes perfect sense to me that at the very least, I don't have to go up to the county of origin to get a certified copy or even send an email. I should be able to go over to my local clerk and say, would you print that out and certify it as a correct copy of the court record? Because it's a statewide branch, a statewide record. There's no reason why the clerk a couple floors down from me can't certify the same record, even if it's a Pennington County case. They should be able to certify it because we know it is, in fact, a true and correct copy they're printing out. So we might be able to bring it closer to home, but I don't know about ever giving up paper completely. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Good. Thanks.
Okay, and I think we have a video. This is I've talked about our e-file and serve system. We thought we'd give you a little demonstration here. Oh, but we have no audio. I always say it's a bad thing when you're doing a technology presentation when the technology doesn't work, so sorry. Okay.
Hi, my name is Michael Lupton, and I'm a Court Operations Manager for the Minnesota Judicial Branch. In the next few minutes, I'm going to give you a quick look at what you're going to face when you use our e-file and e-serve tool. My first message to you is it's quick and it's easy. My second message to you is that there'll be plenty of training for you and your colleagues so you can file electronically. A firm administrator will set up your account. To log on, enter your email address and your password. Your initial screen shows you your filings from your most current filing at the top. To file into a case, you can select the folder that says file into this case, or if you're going to file a new case, you can do that here. This screen will also show you the service contacts. By clicking on this icon, you'll see if there's anyone available for service. You'll know this because they'll have an email address. We're going to do a filing into this case. We'll select the folder. Here's a tip. There are breadcrumbs at the very top. As you move from one breadcrumb to the next breadcrumb, it will say what happened previously. On the Parties tab, you can add a party if you need to. You can select Next. To construct our filings, first we have to enter our filing code. You can simply start typing the document, and this will shorten the list. You can select the document code from the list, and now we're ready to enter the filing description. The filing description goes into the court computer system. If you don't have any specific information to put here, you can simply copy the filing code. The reference number is for internal purposes and is mostly used for accounting. We're now going to add the fee. So you'll add the appropriate fee for your filing and select Add. We're also going to e-serve into this case. To serve, I'll select here, and you'll see that a new breadcrumb has been added for the service contacts. We can enter a filing comment down below. This filing comment does not go into the court computer system and is just for your communication with the clerk. At this time, you can also add a courtesy copy. By adding an email address, the party will receive email notification once the clerk accepts the document. This will have a link to the filed document. Next, you'll select a payment account and the filing attorney. Select Next. We're now going to determine our service contacts. You'll know that a service contact is available because they'll have an email address and you'll see which party they're connected to. You can select them or deselect them. Once you've made your selection, click Next. We're almost done. Now we have to upload our filing. Click here and select your document. Finally, select your document security level. Select Next. This will bring you to a summary page. If everything looks okay, you can select Submit. If you want to make an edit before you submit, just click here to fix any errors. Finally, we'll bring you to a confirmation page. This will let you know that your filing has been successfully uploaded. You can go to Return to My Filings. This will bring you back to the main page, and it will show you that your filing is being submitted. That's it. You filed your case. No trips to the courthouse, no FedEx pickup. Just a few minutes at the computer. That was a brief overview of the eFile and Serve tool, which is currently being used in Hennepin and Ramsey District Courts. It'll be coming to 9 more courts in 2012. No need to remember everything you saw here today. There'll be plenty of training opportunities, both in person and online, for you and your firm administrator to help you get set up for e-filing. You can find more information on our website at www.mncourts.gov. Thank you for watching and happy e-filing.
A little trivia, if you actually type www, you're probably over 45. I just found that out from my daughter, the computer geek. Just going on to a couple other tools we have, we're trying to provide access to some of our criminal justice partners. As Mr. Sikora, I'm sure, will tell you, public defenders walk into a courtroom ready to meet new clients that day. They don't know who's going to be on the list, and they don't necessarily have access to any kind of file for them. This fast access pilot that involves the first appearance support track is what the acronym is, using a general login and a same-day password. The password's good for one day to access the files that are going to be heard that day or that session. It allows public defenders to access the court file before their name is actually put on as the attorney of record. And it facilitates them being able to talk to the client about what's in the complaint or what else is in the court file so they can perhaps resolve cases more expeditiously. Once we have all the documents in the electronic bucket, which is what we're working on right now, either through e-filing or through imaging, we have an entirely electronic court file. The next step, obviously, is to provide access to parties, to lawyers, to access the court file electronically. Our primary vehicle to do that is the Minnesota Public Access System, or MPA. And we have different versions of it. We have the remote view so that somebody in their law firm in their office can access court records for cases that are part of or that are public records. There is an MPA courthouse, which are those documents which are classified such that you can't access them remotely. A good example of that is orders for protection. By federal law, you cannot access remotely, so they are classified such that you have to come down to the courthouse to actually view those. And then confidential documents, it depends on if you're an attorney on the case, whether you can see those. But that's our current vehicle for the public to be able to access them. We have not rolled that out to a great degree because, again, we're working to make sure that all the documents we have that are electronic are classified appropriately so that confidential information is not being published out onto a public access terminal. Judge's tools, this is Judge Awesome, or at least, and that's his name, not just how he operates. He, over the shoulder, look at MINSIS, is SessionWorks, which allows a judge to bring up the various documents in a case and get a full screen view, to be able to look at documents and read them and refer to them on the bench or even in chambers a lot more easily than trying to look at a small computer screen. Even now when I have a jury in front of me, I have to tell them that I'm not playing Angry Birds on my computer, that all of our files are electronic now, so when I'm on the computer, I'm not surfing the web or anything. I'm actually doing court business. Some of the benefits we have already found are, first of all, there's 24/7 e-filing. Lawyers no longer have to make trips to the airport post office. I think the initiation for young associates in any firm was knowing the route to the airport post office to get your filing in because they were open 24/7 and you get your postmark at 11:59 on that day to make sure you were timely. Well, you don't have to do that anymore, so that little tradition of hazing new associates is gone because you can e-file and you get the timestamp when you file it right up through 11:59 from your law office or your home. So that allows for more access to actually take care of business. Also improve file management.
Your Honor.
Yeah.
So if MINSIS is down or you can't access it at 11:59 and your document is due, what do you do? Do you waive that time because it was a MINSIS problem, or do you say you should have filed it at 11:58? Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, we actually provide a safety valve outlet when that happens. The first part is e-filing is not part of MINSIS itself. It's actually a separate system maintained by Tyler, and its downtime is very, very small, but we recognize there might be downtime in any system. So the rules that the Supreme Court promulgated when we went to mandatory, if you got to use it, we got to make sure it's available, and if it's not available, that you have an excuse. There is a mechanism to say the computer system was down, I could not file it. Kind of the computer ate my homework type excuse, but we've got all the verification and logs indicating that that might be the case. And so if the system goes down, we're going to be aware of it. The lawyers will be aware of it. We'll try and get the word out, but they can also file a motion to file it as if it were filed when the computer system was down.
Okay.
Obviously, more efficient use of staff time. I think the best example of that is until I started working on eCorp Minnesota, I did not realize that in the 4th Judicial District, there is an email group for all staff except judges. And I found out the reason why there is that email list is because they don't want the judges knowing that the clerks are emailing each other saying, where's file 27 CV 10685, last seen in Judge Cahill's chambers, but we know he hates papers, so he probably threw it away. But we're just wondering if anybody's seen that file. And there are multiple emails every day of people chasing the paper file around. And the number of hours of internal bleeding we have trying to get the right paper and the right file and make sure that file is filed appropriately and not misfiled and then gone for good is immense. And I think by having an electronic environment, you attach it right to the case so that when you go to the case, the document is there. And obviously there's reduced paper costs because we're not using paper as much.
Excuse me, Judge. Representative Black.
I'm thinking about that. Thank you, Chairwoman. I'm thinking about that person that Chair Hillstrom mentioned, who doesn't have a computer at home, comes in and wants to access a file. Is there a way for them, say they want to study the document and they don't have a computer at home, to get a printout of the document, or will there still be that possibility?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair and Representative Blight, that is the case. You can always hit the print button. We don't really call it paperless, even though I've been using that term. We like to use paper on demand because it's less scary. We can still hit the print button, and so if somebody wants to take something with, there'll obviously be a charge for it, which is 25 cents a page or something, whatever the cost is. But there is that capability. In fact, I know there is because judges use it all the time.
Do you charge judges 25 cents a page?
I'd like to. Madam Chair, I would like to. But I have to allow for the culture change to occur in a more kind and gentle way, so I won't charge people for their own paper use. I am trying to set a good example in not using paper at all. But I'll admit even I print out something every now and then.
Excuse me, Representative Griskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judge Cahill, have you projected the savings to the system because of this? You're going to save a lot, I would expect, in travel and mileage and probably a lot of savings outside of the court system as you think about police officers transporting people, et cetera. Any idea how many FTEs you can shed in the system over time because of this?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, Representative Druskowski, as you heard, a lot of these savings can be with our partners, with attorneys and law enforcement. Representative Lesch has probably heard from some police officers that they probably appreciate not having to come down to the courthouse for to sign every complaint. So for police especially who were inappropriately being paid as I paid couriers to walk these complaints down, I think that's been a huge savings. And for lawyers not having to get couriers and postage, I think it's been a benefit for them. But as I said, for the court internally, there is an advantage for as far as moving the paper around, doing data entry. Since we're just in our pilot phase, we don't have numbers, and I think, as I said at the overview we gave, other states have looked at it and they've saved as much as 30% of their data entry clerks. That's not 30% overall in the branch, but the people we have doing data entry and file management, like our file records clerks, what we've heard from other jurisdictions is generally about a 30% savings in FTEs. We have had 10 people working our record center. We're down to 3 on that now, for example, because of our imaging of paper and also our use of electronic files. So just within Hennepin, we've been able to reduce some of our FTEs. The broad final number, we don't know until we roll out statewide. And we currently have just 11 counties.
Judge, do you know how much you spent in technology to save those 3 FTEs? Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure the exact numbers. The problem is right now we are shifting. This e-filing system, aside from MNSIS, which was implemented a number of years ago, the e-filing system has been paid for on a transactional basis. For example, if a lawyer files a document, it was a $5 cost, which we as a branch have been absorbing. We did not pass it along to the filer. For one thing, we don't think we have the legislative authority to do that. But it's been on a transactional basis, and so I don't know what the ultimate numbers were. We had it capped at $500,000, but I don't think we've ever gotten close to that. And Mr. Moore can probably talk about how we're doing it, what the long range, because I think we're looking at shifting from a per transaction basis to more of a flat license fee. Mark, do you have any?
Our license fees with Tyler been negotiated. They are a per transaction, but with over anyone by any certain limits that they can't go above, so that we don't exceed our budget or our expended budget in any one year. So there is, we do anticipated volume through trend analysis, and we establish the range, as Judge Cahill would say, and then we agree that we won't go out over that. And right now, because we are just in a pilot phase, and for much of the pilot phase we've been in a voluntary mode, meaning we haven't been requiring e-filing, just encouraging it, we haven't got up to, you know, large percentages of participation. But just recently we went in September in Ramsey and in Hennepin mandatory on civil filings, and that participation rate went up, but we're still well under the $500,000 a year total fees related to e-filing. And that would be for both e-service and e-filing charges.
And Madam Chair, I think and to be honest, at this point in the pilot phase, the costs do outweigh the savings that we have right now, because we haven't been able to implement all the savings, having the centralization, the statewide rollout. Once we get to that point, I think that's where you'll see the savings. We're starting to see some, for example, small pockets, like in Hennepin, as I said. But it has involved some costs that we have eaten internally to reach that point. But to be honest, at this point, the costs are probably outweighing the savings at this point.
So, Judge Cahill, do you anticipate that when you roll it out statewide, that in greater Minnesota, that all of the jurisdictions are going to have enough Wi-Fi access or internet broadband capability that they're going to be able to electronically file from, you know, the sheriff's office or the local police chief to actually do these e-filings and have the broadband. Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, I think we are, and I think that's a good example of the costs that we're incurring now that are outweighing the benefits we receive or the cost savings, because we are spending money on increasing our Wi-Fi capability in all the courthouses to allow partners to be able to access. And that costs money, and many counties are unwilling to look at it. They read the statute very narrowly to say they're to provide us the facilities, but that doesn't include upgraded Wi-Fi for e-courts. And so the courts have had to swallow some of that. In Hennepin County, we've contributed some money, and the county also has done the same. So we've been able to work out a sharing arrangement on the costs for the increase in Wi-Fi in Hennepin County. But that is a good example of the costs up front that we're going to incur.
So, Judge Cahill, then, do you anticipate that you'll be asking for locals to pay a portion of the implementation of this Wi-Fi access increase in Greater Minnesota, Judge Cahill?
Madam Chair, I don't think we've reached that point. I think the branch as a whole is going to try and fund it through the individual districts are going to contribute to the statewide effort. So we're going to have it go into the central pot and then have that so that we can be more strategic on planning the Wi-Fi rollout. So that we're not just having each local district or local county fight with their local board of commissioners and have each judicial district come up with money and have state court administration orchestrated.
Mr. Moore, did you have something to add?
No, just as Judge Cahill said, so we've increased bandwidth across the state as well. That was funded by the branch. We didn't ask the individual counties to participate in that. And the wireless project is funded by the branch, but that's through district-level contributions. All the judicial districts through the district administrators pool resources and make the allocation funding at the branch level. And so the branch is funding all the wireless build-out that we're doing now.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Judge Cahill, so what does it cost for a local county courthouse to become wireless? I know a lot of our homes and businesses, it's usually not very expensive cost. Is it similar there?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, Representative Druskowski, it's entirely dependent on the size of the facility. The Hennepin County Government Center being a good example, probably the one most expensive because we have 96 courtrooms, and so on 24 floors, and eight different court buildings, and so our part of it is going to be $400,000. Where'd we get the money? Through the vacancy savings from the clerks who we don't have moving files around. So we're using some of those vacancy savings to be able to fund it. But I think that's a good example. I'm guessing a small courthouse that has a couple of courtrooms is going to be much less. It's all about the different nodes you have to put in, the different, help me, Mark.
No, it's
I'm
true.
Mr. Moore.
That's fine. I didn't want to sort of jump in there. It's highly dependent on the size of the building, the architecture of the building. So in many cases, the older buildings are great facilities, but often the walls are thick and made of masonry, and so you have to saturate them. So you can't always look at the square footage and say, you know, it's going to be $5,000 versus that same square footage in a more modern building might be $2,500 just because you have to put more access points so that you get the coverage. So it's really working with the justice partners and the county administrators, figuring out where do you want to have the Wi-Fi access, what are the specific characteristics of that building, and then make sure you go in with the appropriate tools and scope out the building. There are tools to measure where the signals are so that you don't oversaturate or undersaturate. So we right-size all those buildings. So it could be anywhere from, you know, a couple of $1,000s to a small, simple courthouse to, you know, maybe $10,000 to $20,000 for a larger size facility. Or if you're looking at multi-level, multi-floor facility that's far more complex in one of our urban areas, it could get into the tens of thousands of dollars for that. So, but we really try to make sure that we don't that we're really smart about where we place them and how we place them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Any idea when we'll have the full rollout throughout the state? And then the attached question, of course, would be Is there going to be an effort to quantify the costs and savings of this project over time?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yes. We're going to try and track the hard FTE costs that would be saved by that. But beyond that, we'd like to talk to partners and see what they've been able to save. There's going to be a lot of soft costs we aren't probably going to be able to identify. But for example, I'd like to know that we went from 10 record center people to 3. I'd like to see what my district's FTE complement was in October of 2010 when we started e-filing and what it's going to be just generally 4 years from now. And I think you're going to see a difference, and I think that difference is almost entirely attributable to the e-court effort. So I would like to see those numbers myself, and we are going to track that.
Madam Chair.
Representative
Drazkowski. Lastly, and thank you, Judge Cahill. Any idea what form that final, will there be a report or something you'll put together? I assume this committee, you'll share it with this committee at that point. And then lastly, again, any idea when we're going to have full rollout throughout the state?
Representative Drazkowski, I assume that they will e-file that report to this committee.
Oh, do we? Madam Chair, how's the broadband access in here?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, Representative Drazkowski, we'll be happy to, I'm sure I'll be in front of this committee in a few years talking about where we are and how much we've saved. And you will get an electronic PDF version of that report. the slide I jumped to kind of gives you an idea on that timing. We are currently in the pilot phase. We have 11 counties. Not all 11 counties are up and running in all lines of business. For example, in Hennepin, we're using e-filing in civil, family, mental health, probate, conciliation court. We are not up in criminal yet, but we will be at the end of February. Also, some mental health probate we're still working on, and I'm missing one major juvenile. We do have not rolled that out yet. Some juvenile delinquency we have, but not CHIPS. So a lot of different lines of business have to be brought up. They can't necessarily all be brought up at once, at least in the pilot phase. We expect that the pilot phase will be done probably by July 1st of this year. There will be a pause as we look at the lessons learned and what things we have to change before we start rolling out even more. We hope in the next phase to roll out to 20 more counties. This is probably still a little more tweaking because even though we have 11 counties of various sizes and location, even more counties will teach us more about what we're doing wrong or what we could do better. And then obviously 30 and 26 to finish it off. We roughly have been talking about a 4-year rollout schedule, but that is a little fluid at this point. We do hope the pilot phase is done by July 1st. And this kind of gives you an idea of the exact counties that are involved. The first ones after Hennepin and Ramsey were Cass, Clay, and Morrison County, and they rolled out in civil. Then they added family, and Washington County started with civil and family. And then Faribault and Dakota came online, and they did that in civil, family, and criminal all together, so this is all additive. And Lake and Cook, which has one judge who shuttles back and forth, so that's why we brought them up together, rolled out in civil, family, criminal, and probate. And we're hoping next month for Kandy, Ohio to roll out with all lines of business at once. And see how that works. And the 12 to 18 months, I think it actually is about 12 months. So we initially gave ourselves 12 to 18, but we're going to be able to finish phase one in 12 months.
So Judge Cahill, if you could walk me through a Hennepin County example where, let's just take criminal because I know that pretty well.
Me too.
So you have a defendant who was arrested and he's charged electronically through e-filing. And he does not qualify for a public defender, so he is pro se, and he doesn't have a public defender or chooses not to have a public defender, and he is in custody. How is a defendant in custody going to access all of the electronic discovery, electronic documents, electronic materials that he's going to need to represent himself in a case? Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, since it is paper on demand, for example, the complaints are probably still going to have to be printed out. There's really no way around that. The defendant who appears in front of the court is going to get a paper copy. Who knows, some days we might have an option for electronic, but my guess is they'll still get the complaint by paper. they'll still get the police reports by paper, so people will be hitting the print button a lot, especially if someone is representing themselves and the prosecutor is providing that. There's really, unless they agree to an email exchange of documents, so. But somebody who's in custody representing themselves will probably get a printed copy on paper, which is not my preferred way of doing things, as you know.
Representative Johnson.
Judge Cahill, as you're rolling this out, I know I've used the electronic filing, but it's not the system you're using, and it does work great. But a lot of these counties are using their own systems between the sheriff's office and the police departments and the attorney's office. This program be able to integrate what they have, or are they going to have to get a whole new systems at another cost?
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, that's, I think, one of the biggest frustrations from a criminal justice system standpoint. The best foundation we had to be able to do this was the fact that we have one system statewide for the courts. That's made it easy to roll out e-filing as we go along. The problem you talk about is the exact problem we have, that there are so many different information systems that police departments have and sheriffs have and prosecutors have, and integrating means going to each individual one and writing integration, and that's amazingly expensive. We're encouraging people to, as much as possible, use the same systems. Most prosecutors, I think it's 57 counties now, use the MCAP system. I don't think it's web-based still. That's the problem. But with MCAPs, we could get 57 different county attorneys and some city attorneys who use it integrated in one fell swoop because it's one system. So I don't think we can integrate easily until we see police, sheriffs, prosecutors, defenders all coming up with a more uniform system of their own, a more statewide. Even if you can limit it to a few, it's easier to write an integration and a system that involves a couple of different points of entry and not 87 or more. So,
about 10 minutes, and then it'll be the public defender's turn.
Okay.
Judge Cahill.
I have, I think, only two slides, so I think that's perfect. Our technology investment plan, which I might want to turn over to Mr. Moore to talk about because he's more articulate about these things.
Sure.
Mr. Moore.
And thank you, Madam Chair. What we have in the next two slides, the first one shows that not all of the technology investments that are in our technology investment plan, but just the highlighted ones, the most meaningful ones, and the ones that support the eCourt initiative. And then we talk a little bit about what we're planning for next biennium. So the first item there is deploying distributed document services statewide. You heard Judge Cahill mention on several occasions how important it is as we become more and more reliant on electronic record, various systems go down. And what we've done is we have a master document repository where all the documents are located, but we've created these satellite or remote servers throughout the state and district. Different districts, and they have copies of that central store, so that if for one reason or another one or more of those stores go down, we can pick up and carry on with those remote data stores. The other important thing that does is, because documents, they call it heavy, they're large files, documents are larger files than text, pushing those over even a broadband network can take some time. If you can move those documents closer to the end user, then your performance increases, and that's another benefit that you get. And we deployed that, and that's been completed. So we've got six of those throughout the state in addition to the central store. We've also enhanced throughout the branch in many locations up to tenfold the bandwidth. That's just the size of the pipe, the amount of data that can go through. And when we did that, we also improved the hardware that's at each end, so that the hardware is more reliable and is faster and has some additional capabilities, again, lending to increased system availability. And that job, system availability, is never done. We'll be constantly looking at new ways to decrease the likelihood of downtime or improve service levels on occasion when downtime occurs by having fail-safe systems. The next item is an item that will carry over. You'll see this repeated in the next biennium. We have an old order for protection system that's separate from our statewide case management system, MNSIS. This system requires dual entry. We enter the order for protection system, and then we feed certain parts of that into our statewide system, and then send that information to the BCA. MNSIS has been augmented to have an OFP module, an order for protection module, which we're currently enhancing even further, and that will be completed sometime later this year. And once that's completed, we'll be able to migrate in the next calendar year to that new system, retire the old system and the costs associated with that, have an improved order for protection system. And another major component of this is a more enhanced data integration with the Bureau of Corrections so that we can pass better data to them. There's also in the future the capability of providing to law enforcement agents the actual copy of the order for protection in their squad car, assuming they've got broadband access and can do that. So that's starting, and the development will be completed in this biennium, but we'll go through the actual implementation, testing, and deployment phases in the next biennium, and then the retirement of the system. VIBES is a traffic module that's in both Ramsey and you can correct me, Judge Cahill, because this predates me, for the Ramsey and Hennepin, and this they didn't migrate to MNSIS with the rest of the state initially in our central payment system because they have unique needs because of their high volume and the way they process that. So what we've done is we are now augmenting again MNSIS with additional capabilities specifically designed to meet the needs of the 4th and the 2nd District in these higher volume processing needs and the way they're processing these cases in the courtroom. We're going to finish that shortly as well, then migrate off of the old VIBE system, and then at that point both Hennepin and Ramsey will move to our central payment processing center and look like the rest or operate like the rest of the branch on that. We're going to enhance our disaster recovery capabilities. That's really what we're calling high availability. And that's really everywhere there's a single point of failure within our system, we're trying to identify that and create multiple paths and multiple ways of keeping our systems up so that if we have a problem server or two within our data center, we can pick that load up pretty easily. If we lose a whole data center, we can pick up the load for that data center within the current service level we're architecting toward is 6 to 8 hours. Which is really good. We believe over time as we get better at it and as we can leverage technologies that we're implementing now, we can probably get that window down to maybe an hour or two. And that would be in a major catastrophic situation. And again, that continues. That we're doing putting many of those components in place. For instance, we'll have our new secondary data center up and running. We're co-locating is what it's called. We're actually renting space from OET in one of their Tier 3 data centers, which is a really high-class facility, and we're going to stand that up before the end of this fiscal year, migrate basic equipment in there, and then we're going to build upon it in the next biennium. And then lastly, we're going to complete implementing, and then I'm moving kind of fast because I know we're short on time. This is a look. This is what the council has approved for us to move forward with in the technology investment plan for the next biennium. Deploy that OFP system I talked about. Retire the VIBES application, which we talked about. Complete part two of the eCourt Minnesota rollout. So we will have completed part one is the pilot courts. We're going to do our lessons learned, come up with our reliable and repeatable process, and have a good deployment template, and then take, I think, approximately 20 additional counties on and complete them by the next end of the next biennium. That's our target and our goal to be confirmed by our study following the pilots. And then toward the end of the biennium, we will start initiating part three of the e-court rollout, which will be another chunk of courts, and then there'll be one more part that would be completed. So there'll be two more parts that would come in the next biennium, part three and part four in the following biennium. And then Judge Cahill talked about the self-represented litigant portal, and that's a portal that ties a number of technologies in using TurboTax-like features to guide a self-represented litigant through the filing process and the post-filing support process, which will be available through the internet and in our courts and in our self-help centers. And then our camper system, Judge Cahill, I don't know if you want to describe briefly what that system is.
Judge Cahill.
Madam Chair, the camper system, I think we talked about that. Our overview is the software that allows for the electronic recording of the conservator financial information so it can be audited. And we hired the, it'll allow us to do a lot more audits and a lot more efficiency.
We have a basic system now, and so this is a new system that will replace that with more advanced integrations between this system and Mensa, so they'll be tied nicely together for financial reporting and auditing practices.
Questions from members? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
Next, we've asked to hear from the Board of Public Defense regarding their technology needs based on the court's implementation of their technology. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Robert Sikora. I work for the State Board of Public Defense. I have for an awfully long time. I realize it's going to be 30 years this summer, the first half of which I spent in the courtroom, and the second half of which I've spent working for the Board of Public Defense and with committees like this one. The only issue I have to take with Judge Cahill's presentation is slide number 3 shows this golden tunnel, almost like whisking us magically into the future. But the truth is, this stuff isn't futuristic at all. I mean, just this morning I was at my doctor's, and he pulls up my x-rays on the screen in front of him, and then he pulls up the blood tests, and then he pulls up something written by a specialist in another city, and it's all on the same screen. So your doctor and my doctor have long ago figured this out. This isn't futuristic stuff at all. They're already on the other side of the golden tunnel. But imagine for a second if my doctor at Alina Health Clinic this morning had the same resources that public defenders currently operate with. And I imagine that the conversation would go something like this. Well, Bob, you know, last time you were in, you saw Dr. Peterson, and he's a part-timer with us, and he downloaded your radiology stuff onto his laptop, and he's not here today, so we won't be able to look at those x-rays. And the specialist report, I was standing at the line in Starbucks this morning with my iPad, and I wanted to get a jump on the day's work, so I downloaded it onto my iPad. But my iPad's in the trunk of my car, so I don't have that. Or maybe that specialist's report came in and it was in a format. I don't have the ability to open that file. I'm sorry. But we do have a collection of paper documents and electronic documents that we can go through. Well, if my doctor said that at Alina Medical Clinic, I'd think something was terribly wrong, and you'd think it was terribly wrong if your doctor did that to you. So Alina has invested a significant amount of money in creating its online medical system. They've gone completely paperless. I imagine your doctor has also. But they've done that because they've built a centralized kind of system that has the backup, that has the file translators so they're not confused by a new file type, that has the ability to provide my medical information to any screen that any doctor in that clinic should have the authority to look at. And that's what we're going to have to do in public defense. As the criminal justice system becomes more electronic, we're not going to be in 160,000 cases a year going through all those little click next, follow this breadcrumb kind of thing. Because that times 160,000 cases is an enormous volume of effort for an agency that currently has only 58% of the FTEs, lawyer FTEs, necessary to handle the caseload. So we can't tell those lawyers who are already handling over large caseloads, we want you to start e-filing manually. So we need to build an electronic way of integrating our information system with the court's information system. So when the court opens a file, it automatically opens in our file. How do we do that? What have we done so far? We learned about the court's plans for e-court on July 31st. By August 7th last year, we issued a request for information for vendors who build this sort of thing. Tyler Technologies is one of them. Thomson Reuters is another. There are about a half a dozen vendors who build the kind of technology that pulls information together, just like my doctor had this morning. We went back and forth with them. We brought in a, a, an international consultancy firm called McGladrey. This is what they do. They evaluate the business processes of people who are moving to all online systems, and they make recommendations to them for how they should do it in a cost-effective and efficient manner. We signed the contract with McGladrey in December, and they're currently traveling around the state, spending mornings in arraignment court with our public defenders, sitting down with our office staff, and trying to figure out how they do their work and how we can go paperless along with the courts. So we are in the second month of that consulting contract that should be complete by May. McGladrey will then evaluate the vendors that I described to you and make recommendations to us about the way forward they think is best and most efficient for us. In the meantime, we're doing our best to keep pace with the courts in their pilot counties. Our lawyers are down in Dakota County today in E-Court, and they're struggling through some kind of basic things. In the past, we haven't bought them fancy things like iPads. We bought them 7-pound laptops. And so they're saying, geez, our arms are killing us after standing in E-Court all day with a 7-pound laptop. And then a document will come in and it'll be scanned as portrait when it's a landscape document. So then we're doing this, standing in front of the judge, and we're trying to zoom in. Couldn't you give us or iPads that would allow us to eat more easily and with less weight and easy portrait landscape transition? Would you do that? And we're saying, be patient. We're doing the research. We want to do the right thing. We don't want to go down the wrong path and spend money on fixing this project until we have the answers. So we have some sort of suffering public defenders at the bleeding edge of this E-Court thing that are actually doing a very good job refining the courts, very easy to work with down in Dakota County and trying to get on top of some of the challenges that are raising their heads down there. So that is the very quick, high-level overview of how we're going to have to respond. You know, when Judge Cahill says we're outsourcing data entry, it's going somewhere, and it's coming to us, and it's going to cost us money to do that, to hire the staff to do that, to build the computer infrastructure to do that. So I'm not here to ask you for a specific dollar amount. I'm just here to tell you. It is going to cost us some money. We're trying to figure out the way to do it best.
Questions from members? Representative Portman.
I can't remember in the governor's budget, did he allocate any money for the public defenders to adapt the new e-filing system and the new technology needs? I know he increased your budget. I can't remember by how much and if he specified what for.
We Mr. did. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative, we did include a couple of technology staff FTEs so that we can begin to work with McGladrey and try to build the major program. But we don't know what to ask for yet, and so that was not in our request to the governor. We only knew that we needed some additional technology staff FTEs, and that is in the governor's line item.
Representative Portman.
Do you think that you'll have information back from your consultant in time for our budgeting process? For example, if you need iPads for the public defenders to put that information before us of what the dollar amount is and that we could respond to it in this budget cycle?
Mr. Secor.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would love to say yes. And I'm chomping at the bit to try to find answers when lawyers call me and say, you know, their shoulder and elbow and their eyes hurt. I want to find solutions for them. I fear that we're not going to make it in time for this session. Though, as I say, I would love to say yes.
Representative Black.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sikora, I remember when I went to law school and I was graduating. I had a Mac in law school, and I was advised, you graduate, you got to get yourself a PC laptop because everyone uses PC in the legal world, and of course at that time you couldn't read a Microsoft Word file on a Mac that was written on a PC or vice versa. software has changed substantially in the 15 years since I graduated from law school. And also, so is the way that we pursue hardware choices. And it seems to me that, that there are plenty of public defenders that already have laptops. Are you developing, or not laptops, but iPads, are you developing or looking at ways where you can implement this technology on a software level, not necessarily hardware dependent, so that if a public defender walks in, already having had an iPad, that you've been focusing more on the software implementation and availability instead of dumping money on a bunch of hardware that they may already have?
Mr. Sikora.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, the phrase that the McGladrey people use when they talk about this is device-independent solutions. And that is one of the requirements that we have on the table with them. And even to the point of saying, of considering the possibility of doing with mobile devices what we currently do with cell phones. We tell lawyers, here's your cell phone stipend. Go buy whatever phone you want. And we'll chip in a certain amount to your purchase of that equipment. One of the things that's on the table is, do we want to do that with this kind of stuff? If somebody wants to get a Samsung Galaxy Android tablet and it works with eCourt, I think they probably should be able to do that rather than have some sort of centralized decision-making process drive those choices. So I think the future is exactly as you described it.
Further questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify about technology and the impact that it might have on what they do in the court? Seeing none. Members, our next meeting is Tuesday, February 5th at 2:15.
Madam Chair.
And we're going to start going over each individual agency's budget. The court will not be going on that day. They're going to go the next week. So we're going to start with the smaller agencies, and they're going to give us more detail. So if you want to start looking at your budget books, and if you haven't picked them up, they are completed and still up by the legislative assistant's desk. What is the question?
Madam Chair, did we do the minutes?
We have not.
I read them, and I will move them.
Representative Portman moves the minutes from January 29th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And member, we are adjourned.